Two candidates and two very different views on justice.
We would see fundamental philosophical differences between this Trump tough on crime, law and order stance and a Biden philosophy that is a bit more holistic in terms of rooting out inequities.
We'll take a close look at where they stand on these key issues. And the big data company Palantir is next in line to go public at a valuation around $22 billion. So why is a global pandemic proving to be such a hot time for IPOs?
You have a much larger base of people who are wanting to buy stocks. And so for companies, that's made it really attractive to start offering shares for the first time now.
Plus, why the price of tea is now sky high. It is Friday, September 25th. I'm Mark Garrison with The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. There have been new reactions from both parties after President Trump declined to say he'll accept the election results and guarantee a peaceful transfer of power. Democrats seized on his comments as a fresh line of attack, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
But it reminds him, you are not in North Korea, you are not in Turkey, you are not in Russia, Mr. President. And by the way, you are not in Saudi Arabia. You are in the United States of America. It is a democracy. So why don't you just try for a moment to honor your oath of office?
As for Republicans, several leading legislators released carefully worded statements of support for smoothly functioning democracy, making no mention of President Trump. Case in point, a tweet from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell saying, quote, "The winner of the November 3rd election will be inaugurated on January 20th. There will be an orderly transition." The president has said an election could be decided by the Supreme Court and argued that shows the need to quickly fill the open seat left by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Republicans are working toward that, and Democrats can see there's not a whole lot they can do to stop them. Official Washington will pause politics briefly for remembrance. We will be following this morning's memorial services for Justice Ginsburg live on WSJ.com. That starts at 9:30 Eastern at the U.S. Capitol. We are reporting that Democrats are prepping a new coronavirus aid package that's around $1 trillion cheaper than what they advanced before. Our congressional reporter Natalie Andrews explains what's likely to be included.
Democrats are looking at assistance for airlines, restaurants, small businesses, all sectors that have really been hurt with the closures during the coronavirus pandemic and people not traveling and eating out. They're also looking at another round of unemployment assistance and helping people there, as well as stimulus checks for Americans. And they would like to provide aid for state and local governments that have also been hit hard.
Chances for a deal before Election Day are slim. Democrats say the price tag of their plan could be roughly $2.4 trillion, which is well above what Republicans say they're willing to spend. To give you a sense of how far apart they are, the GOP Senate bill was $300 billion, though the Trump administration has signaled it could back a bill up to $1.5 trillion. In other news, we are exclusively reporting that the Blue Cross Blue Shield Health Insurance Group reached a tentative antitrust settlement for $2.7 billion. The upshot could also be a change in practices that allegedly limited competition among the dozens of companies in the group. They collectively cover roughly one in three Americans, according to Blue Cross Blue Shield. Police made several arrests last night as protests continued in Louisville, Kentucky. The latest demonstrations began after news that the officers involved in the fatal shooting of Breonna Taylor would not face charges directly related to her death. Demonstrators also marched in New York, L.A., and other cities Thursday night. A little later on in the podcast, we will step back and look at differences between President Trump and Joe Biden on criminal justice policy. Reporting that data mining company Palantir is expected to be valued at around $22 billion when it goes public next week. It's the latest big public debut in what's turning out to be a very strong year for IPOs. Markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff explains why.
Investors have really been encouraged to buy stocks this year because the Fed has slashed interest rates to about zero, and that's really made it unattractive to be invested in bonds. And so for companies, that's made it really attractive to start offering shares for the first time now, because they can either let the market determine the price in a much larger market than there's been in recent years, And they can also just say, you know, we're going to offer it at this set price, and maybe they can offer it a little bit higher and people are willing to pay that in this environment.
Coming up in a year of reckoning around racial justice and policing, we will look at where President Trump and Joe Biden stand on key issues. As part of our ongoing election coverage, we're taking a deep look at how President Trump and Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden differ on major policy issues. Today, policing, crime, and racial justice, which have risen to the top of the American agenda, as high-profile police killings and shootings of Black Americans sparked new calls for change. Joining us to discuss where the candidates stand is Sadie Gurman, our Justice Department reporter. Sadie, nice to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with a hot-button topic, policing. We've definitely seen the campaigns try to define each other on this topic. Let's focus on what they actually say, starting with Biden.
On policing, Biden would bring a dramatically different philosophy to the Justice Department and beyond when it comes to, you know, police accountability. One of his main priorities is having the Justice Department use its authority to hold entire cities accountable for police misconduct. These are known as pattern and practice investigations, and they're designed to sort of root out constitutional rights violations within an entire department. And if the Justice Department finds rights violations, then it can basically sue a city, and these can be incredibly costly and burdensome reforms.
And how does the Trump campaign differ on police policy questions?
Well, they're fundamentally different because while Biden has made, you know, systemic racism in law enforcement a priority, the Trump administration and Trump administration officials have said they don't believe it exists. They say that there are, you know, a few bad apples in policing, but there's not a fundamental problem with the system that needs to be fixed. So while Biden has proposed very sweeping reforms in terms of pushing for legislation that would lower the bar to bring federal civil rights charges against individual officers, you know, the Trump administration has offered a much more limited approach to reform, focusing instead on, you know, some use of force type of training and policy over, you know, fundamental deep-seated changes to police work.
Now, sentencing is one of the big policy questions in the world of justice. What has President Trump done in this area?
Well, President Trump has touted his rare bipartisan success on criminal justice reform. In 2018, he signed into law the First Step Act, which was a major revision of the nation's sentencing laws that basically aimed to allow for early release of thousands of nonviolent drug offenders and to sort of shore up some of the discrepancies in sentencing law that had persisted and led to minorities in particular being impacted and incarcerated for long periods of time. So he has touted his success in this area, but meanwhile, his Justice Department has also ended policies that showed lenience to certain lower level offenders. And he has also jump-started the federal death penalty, which had been on hiatus for nearly 20 years. So he's offering kind of disparate philosophies in the area of criminal justice.
And how might a potential Biden administration be different on these questions of sentencing?
Well, it might not be that much different. I think that Biden has proposed decriminalizing marijuana and also showing, you know, using clemency toward more nonviolent offenders in the way that Obama did, while Trump has, you know, used that power in more limited ways. The Biden administration would potentially seek early release for more and more people who have, you know, committed sort of lower level drug offenses. But, you know, this is one area where they're offering kind of a similar platform. They both want to see, you know, decrease incarceration, but Trump is sort of offering a divergent view of crime and policing.
How would you summarize their overall philosophies on law enforcement? Just to kind of sum this up, what changed when President Trump took office? And if there were to be a Biden administration, what would change in that situation?
Sure. So when Trump took over, we saw the Justice Department undo many of the policies that were hallmarks of the Obama Justice Department. In particular, there was a policy known as Smart on Crime that aimed to show lenience to certain lower level drug offenders that Trump's first attorney general, Jeff Sessions, immediately undid and urged federal prosecutors to seek the toughest possible sentences for all offenders, regardless of whether it was their first time. And so that was a significant sea change that we I would anticipate if Biden is elected, we would go back to that earlier policy. And civil rights activists are pressuring Biden to go even farther than what Obama did with his Justice Department. So we might see even more sort of shifts and sea changes at the Justice Department, particularly in the areas of civil rights and policing.
Okay, Sadie Gurman, thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you want to know more about how the candidates differ on other major policy issues, we've got a special Election 2020 page on WSJ.com. And finally, apart from water, the world's most popular drink is tea, and it's even more popular during the pandemic. That growing thirst, along with supply issues, have sent wholesale prices soaring, up 50% since March. Our Lucy Kramer explains.
The biggest problem here is this is actually a supply-driven story as opposed to a demand-driven story. There are a lot of kind of problems in tea-producing countries. The three biggest exporters of tea, Sri Lanka, India, and Kenya. Sri Lanka had a drought at the start of the year, which pushed up prices in Sri Lanka. In India, COVID has been really bad and is ongoing. So both out of Sri Lanka and India, production fell, exports fell, and when you have less tea going into the market, prices start to rise.
These supply problems won't be easy to fix. Only a handful of countries can grow leaves good enough to brew. Here's Lucy on tea terroir.
When people talk about producing tea, it's very like producing wine. They talk about the fact that the soil that the shrub is grown in, you know, affects the taste, as does the climate and the weather conditions. I mean, you couldn't just grow it in your back garden in the US. It's grown in very specific kind of areas. And I mean, these places have been growing it for decades, if not centuries.
And that's What's News for Friday. We're back tonight with an updated show. If you like us, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Garrison with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.